Good evening, everyone. I'm Lina Ahmoudou. Welcome to Health Chat. The world just marked World Toilet Day on November 19. It's an annual landmark highlighting the global sanitation crisis. Health experts say diarrheal disease is the second leading killer of children younger than five. It causes more illnesses than any other ailment. In a new report entitled Defeat Diarrheal Disease Initiatives, experts say children who survive an episode but experience repeated infections are more likely to suffer from lifelong cognitive and physical impairments. Published by the organization PATH, the new State of the Field report on diarrhea reveals some good news. Childhood diarrhea deaths have decreased by nearly 50% between 2006 and 2016. However, children are still getting sick, and infections are a major problem. In 2016, there were over 1 billion cases of diarrhea in young children. So today we will look at the issue of diarrhea, water and sanitation as a whole, and other problems related to that. And joining us in the studio for more on the subject is Eileen Quinn. She's Director of Advocacy and Communications with the Center for Vaccine Innovation and Access at PATH. Ms. Quinn, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us.
Great. Well, we will discuss diarrhea disease and other issues in a moment. But first, VOA's Jessica Berman has this report.
Everyone knows about the flu and the common cold, but not as many people are familiar with norovirus, despite the fact that it runs rampant around the world. The pathogen is shockingly common, sickening 700 million people every year, mainly in the developed world, and medical costs run upward of $60 billion in lost productivity due to personal illness or caring for a sick child. The virus causes severe diarrhea, nausea, and vomiting. It also kills approximately 219,000 people a year. Bruce Lee and colleagues estimated the cost of the illness in 233 countries, regions, and territories around the world. Lee is a professor of international health at the Johns Hopkins University Bloomberg School of Public Health. He says norovirus, a viral infection few people have heard of, is responsible for about 50% of all gastrointestinal illnesses around the world.
And we were interested in quantifying or better characterizing the impact of norovirus, because it's something that you've heard of, but if you think about it, you're not really sure, well, what's the impact? How often does it occur? How widespread is it?
In fact, Lee says the actual number of people who get sick with norovirus may be an underestimate because a substantial number of cases go unreported.
So people may suffer with the symptoms and they think, oh, well, I've got a stomach bug, quote unquote, or I've got some food poisoning, and they never really report it or get diagnosed.
Researchers report their estimates in the journal PLOS ONE. The calculations are thought to be the first regarding the global impact of norovirus. Lee says the disease is a very aggressive intestinal illness, causing the worst diarrhea most people have ever had. While there's no vaccine for norovirus, Lee hopes greater awareness will lead to control measures. These include washing hands and disinfecting food preparation areas. And there's a third consideration.
Many times people who work in restaurants or the food preparation industry feel obligated to show up to work even though they're sick, because many folks are on wages and they can't afford to miss a day. And so they'll come in sick and then they'll end up contaminating food and then spread it to many other people.
Under these circumstances, he says workers should be encouraged to stay home. Lee says there are experimental vaccines under development that he hopes will one day help contain the spread of norovirus. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
Ms. Quinn, again, thank you so much for joining us. I know the report talks specifically about norovirus, but today we wanted to look at the big picture in terms of water sanitation and related diseases. Can you give us a sense of the scope of the problem when it comes to water and sanitation?
Well, I think the broader issue is that children are getting sick from diarrhea. Mm-hmm. Water and sanitation, lack of access to good water and sanitation are part of the reason, but there are other causes as well. And so we have about 500,000 children dying from diarrhea every year. And as you know, these children are repeatedly sick, so there's over a billion cases of diarrhea every year.
So what are some of the more frequent reasons that we know of, in terms of, especially when we look at the sub-Saharan African region, for example?
Yeah. So a big issue is that children and families do not have access to proper sanitation, and they don't have access to water sources that are free of contamination. So there's really a cycle in the germs are moving through the environment for the children and the families, sort of all over the place in terms of, you know, food preparation, in terms of changing diapers or changing children's clothing, trying to keep a household clean. So it's really a contaminated environment in which a lot of children in Africa are growing up through no fault of their families, because the communities are just not getting the resources they need.
So it's one of the issues, as you mentioned, is resources.
Yes, absolutely. So, you know, just to say that we've made enormous progress in reducing mortality from diarrhea, and that was because we invested in public health. We invested in vaccines, we invested in water sanitation. That's proof that when we make these kinds of investments, we can make a big difference. Sometimes people believe that aid doesn't work or that public health doesn't work. Yeah. It does work. So the challenge here is to sustain the effort and keep making sure that those who are the most affected and the most vulnerable are getting the resources. You know, there's been progress in urban centers, there's been progress in capitals, but we have to make sure that every community is able to have access to vaccines, to nutrition, to water and sanitation.
So you mentioned progress, and this is some good news. It's good to report that we're seeing positive results. When we talk about progress, how does this translate?
Well, we've been able to reduce diarrheal diseases, death from diarrheal diseases, from over 2 million just about 10 years ago to 500,000 now. So we've really made tremendous progress. However, I should note that back in the 1980s, we also saw a steep decline in death from diarrhea. That was when UNICEF, the World Bank, and others really sort of launched the child survival kind of revolution. Unfortunately, progress then stalled. So we flatlined for about 20 years. And now that we're making progress again and we're moving the curve, we have to make sure that we keep our eye on the ball and we keep the focus on making sure that children are receiving all of the components that they need: access to water, sanitation, nutrition, vaccines.
Okay. Now, when we talk about advocacy, and which is something that you're definitely involved in, what is the message? What do we advocate for? Is it for more money? Is it for government to include more, to have more focus on this issue? What is being advocated?
Yeah, I think first and foremost, we need awareness. Okay. And that's one of the reasons why we started the Defeat Diarrheal Disease Initiative, mm-hmm. because we had people advocating for different aspects of this issue, but we weren't actually keeping people aware that diarrhea matters. In a lot of countries around the world, diarrhea is such a fact of life, they mm-hmm. don't think there's anything that can be done about it. In the country where I live, it's considered just an inconvenience. And so in both cases, we're not actually focusing on it as this is a problem for which we have solutions, and we shouldn't just accept that it's okay that these children are consistently sick with diarrhea. It's affecting their performance in school. It's affecting their lifelong ability to grow and thrive because it causes malnutrition, stunting, cognitive impairment, and therefore these childhood diarrhea really ruins the rest of these children's lives.
Oh, yes. And now let me ask you this, because as we talked about diarrhea and everything, we focus a lot on children. Of course, they are very vulnerable. But is this the same is there a concern for adults with diarrheal disease as well?
There is a concern that also adults who have recurring problems with diarrhea may end up with other types of illnesses, you know, sort of related to just their body's ability to stay healthy, their immune system possibly being compromised. Our focus is on children under age 5 because it's really that's when the children are likely to die from diarrhea, and it's also where the damage is done to their developmental potential. One of our colleagues in Zambia is very articulate about this. He says, if you miss that window when a child's brain and body is able to develop normally, you never get it back. So keeping these children healthy in those critical years of their lives is very important.
Now let's go back to the report. Tell us about some of the highlights and perhaps some findings that were unexpected or deemed surprising.
Yeah, I think the newest research in the field is really bringing to the spotlight this long-term effect that happens on children, this cycle that happens within their developing bodies, so that as they have an episode of diarrhea, it's eroding the ability of their digestive system to function properly. Then what happens is that as they do eat food, the nutritious aspects of the food aren't actually being absorbed by their bodies. So they get sicker, and then they have more infections and more problems. So that's part of the vicious cycle that we're worried about. But more importantly, as that nutrition is sort of wasted and not able to be absorbed, these children end up with problems learning, with brain development problems. They're stunted, they're just smaller, and their bodies aren't healthy. And then that affects everything else that happens to those children and the potential for them and their families.
So can you share with us some of the sicknesses that can lead to diarrhea, maybe perhaps a couple?
Well, rotavirus is one of the ones that's least appreciated. So, and rotavirus actually affects children all over the world. Mm. My child had rotavirus, but I lived 5 minutes away from a hospital. For a mother who's in Malawi or Burkina Faso, the hospital might be quite far away. They're far from a clean water source, so it's difficult to rehydrate the child, and then they're very far from healthcare. So for that mother or father, they have a terrible dilemma with a child who's very sick and unable to get care.
Yes.
So rotavirus happens around the world, but it's the children in Africa and Asia who die from rotavirus. There is a vaccine now for rotavirus, and that is starting to be rolled out. And that's a subsidized vaccine. So Gavi, the Vaccine Alliance, is supporting countries to introduce that vaccine. And we've seen dramatic declines in rotavirus illness and death since the introduction of that vaccine. So rotavirus is one. Another one is called ETEC and Shigella. That's ETEC is basically an E. coli vaccine. We hear about that in bacteria. We hear about that in this country as a foodborne illness, but it's also a waterborne illness in parts of the world. Cholera is another one. So, you know, there's lots of sort of bacteria that assault a young child. And what we need to do is think about the comprehensive package of solutions that will protect children.
Yes, indeed. Now, you talked about solution. What are some of the cost-effective solutions that could be implemented in developing countries where resources may be difficult to come by?
Yeah. So I've mentioned vaccines because with support from Gavi, countries can introduce these vaccines. And it's about preventing rather than treating. So, I think we've learned a long way that when you prevent the illness in a child, you really save costs over for the health system overall. So vaccines are considered a best buy in public health. And now we have really good innovations on point of use and point of community water and sanitation solutions. So they're sort of scaled. They're not major sewage systems or water pipe systems, but they're more scaled to being adapted and used in communities. So those are quite cost effective as well.
All right. These are very, very interesting ideas and solutions that you're sharing with us. We are going to continue our conversation with Eileen Quinn of the organization PATH in a moment. It's now time to take a short break. And when we come back, we will continue to discuss water, sanitation, diarrheal disease, and related illnesses. But first, let's go to this report by VOA's Lisa Schlein.
The UN Children's Fund warns children are at great risk in Yemen, Somalia, and South Sudan, which are on the brink of famine. The number of malnourished and severely acutely malnourished children in those countries is staggering. UNICEF reports an estimated 4.7 million children in the cholera-stricken countries are malnourished. Of these, UNICEF spokesman Christophe Bouillerac tells VOA more than 1 million are suffering from severe acute malnutrition.
Let me remind you that a child who is suffering from severe acute malnutrition are 9 times more likely to die of disease than a well-nourished child. So having cholera and diarrhea in countries where so many children are so fragile because of malnutrition, among other things, because of such a bad access to safe water is extremely worrying.
UNICEF says it also is extremely worried about an outbreak of acute watery diarrhea in Sudan, where the Federal Ministry of Health reports more than 20,000 cases of the disease, including over 400 deaths. Bouillerac says the disease has spread to 14 of 18 states, and children account for more than 20% of the affected population.
The situation in White Nile State, which is in central Sudan, is deeply worrying since it is the most affected with 7,200 reported cases and since it has almost 100,000 refugees living in camps.
UNICEF says it needs access, security, and more money to contain cholera and acute watery diarrhea in all four countries. It says aid operations must be scaled up. Malnourished children must receive special life-saving medication, therapeutic feeding, and have access to safe drinking water. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Welcome back. For those of you joining us late, tonight we are discussing water, sanitation, and related diseases. Our guest is Eileen Quinn. She is Director of Advocacy and Communications with the Center for Vaccine Innovation and Access at PATH. So, Eileen, before the break, well, before the package, the report, we were talking about some of the diseases that were creating diarrhea among children, and we just heard about cholera. So tell us, let me have your reaction on the report that we just heard.
So it's very typical in these emergency situations for there to be outbreaks of cholera and diarrheal disease. And in fact, in some ways, that's when the world tunes in following an earthquake, when we have a large movement of refugees, or when there's, you know, sort of the floods and inundation that we had earlier this year in Bangladesh and Asia. So the issue is there are these emergency outbreaks. At the same time, the World Bank calls diarrheal disease a silent emergency, something that's happening all the time that we're not paying attention to. It actually rarely makes the news that on any given day in a country in Africa, children are suffering from diarrhea, dying from diarrhea, when in fact we know how to prevent this. So, I mean, and that has been one of the challenges for keeping this on the radar screen for policymakers, something that is always going on, rarely gets their sort of urgent attention. But this is an issue that we know how to solve and that could continue. You know, we can make really steady progress on this. It doesn't have to be always in a crisis situation.
Yes, indeed, because it seems like we seem to see often the case where it is a crisis situation that is being handled as opposed to prevention. So the best practice in terms of prevention will be then?
So it's really about what we call an integrated package of solutions, vaccines, access to clean water and sanitation, and strong nutrition. And that can be breastfeeding or, you know, sort of really just strong nutrition overall. I was interested in the report, you know, talking about the malnutrition that these children suffer. The estimate globally is that 50% of malnutrition cases are caused by children getting sick because they don't have access to clean water and sanitation. Mm-hmm. So there really is a strong link. And if we just try to address malnutrition without addressing this underlying cause, we will not make the progress we need to make.
Okay. Now, some people say that with challenges that underdeveloped countries are faced with, they're different, there are several, it is a challenge to make sanitation a priority. What is your reaction to that?
I think of it as an investment and economic development strategy for countries. Children who are not reaching their full potential are holding back themselves, and their families are held back, and their whole communities are held back. They're not able to join the economy in the way that they need to, in a way that will benefit that community and that country. So investing in sanitation, investing in the right nutrition, investing in health, these are really ways in which countries actually improve their odds of economic development over time. I think it's a good investment.
A good investment indeed, and we hope that some, you know, countries will realize it. But what do you think in terms of advocacy, again, to come back to that, what is the message? What and how is it received?
Well, I think in the countries that have a high burden of diarrheal disease, there's a lot of recognition mm-hmm. that this is a problem, and it's affecting not only the health of their citizens, but also their economic potential. I think it's not always recognized as an important priority at the global level. So I think that, you know, there's always challenges with competing priorities, you know, HIV and the latest outbreak of Zika or anything else. But here's a solution. We're keeping our steady progress and being focused on making consistent progress mm-hmm. can really determine for a lot of children that their potential can be realized.
Now, tell us about, touch on PATH as an organization. I wanted us to talk a little bit about your work. Even though we're talking about sanitation, I know the organization also has other programs and activities that you do to make an impact. So can you give us a sense of the work of PATH and other program perhaps that
yeah.
you do?
Thank you for asking. PATH works in over 70 countries around the world. Our focus is on improving the health of children and women in the world's poorest communities. Our focus is on equity, making sure that those who should have access do have access to health care and health technologies like vaccines, diagnostics, reproductive health technologies. So we're interested in improving health around the world, and we're working across a spectrum of different diseases, malaria, HIV. We do a lot of work on nutrition as well. Our focus a lot is on the diseases that are causing the most death for children under the age of 5. That's pneumonia, diarrhea, malaria. But we also work on polio. We work on really a range of issues and trying to sort of think about ways in which we bring new ideas that can be scaled up and make a difference for communities.
And a lot of times people talk about the fact that sometimes when you have a non-profit or non-governmental organization going in communities to work, sometimes communities are not involved in the process. What can you tell us in terms of the model of your organization?
Yeah, that's a great question. PATH will only work in joint partnership with the affected communities and the government there. We're not there to do the job of that community or that government. We're there to sort of provide support and assistance to the job that they want to do. So we see ourselves often as the sort of sitting in the background. We try to be a partner, and we're taking our lead from the community in terms of them identifying their needs. If we think about some of the products that we try to develop, like diagnostics or vaccines, we're asking those affected communities, tell us what will work here. And then we try to bring something that's actually tailored to what they said to us.
And what are some of the countries that you work in, whether it's in Africa or around the world, just a few countries?
Yeah, well, we have had ongoing presence in Zambia, South Africa, Ethiopia, Kenya, Tanzania, Malawi. Well, maybe not consistently in Malawi, but we've worked really. Senegal is another place where we've had a strong presence for decades. So we work across Africa. Some of our projects have, you know, sort of a limited duration in a country like Malawi would be an example where we've been doing a lot of work on malaria. But maybe we haven't been, you know, setting up a permanent office there. But we are, we also work a lot in Asia. We have a strong presence in India and the Mekong region.
And do you have a typical time frame in terms of the length of your project, or it depend? Does it depend on the project?
Yes, it really will depend on the project, but generally speaking, the sort of projects that allow the time for really thoughtful consultation, allow for a lot of community input, allow for designing properly what the intervention should be and how they should be implemented, those are the projects that are more successful. It doesn't really work to go in with a prepackaged kind of approach, mm-hmm. but instead to be working in a consultative kind of iterative way with communities so that there's learning and adjusting as you go. So those projects of 3 or 4 years tend to have a higher success rate because there's more chance to self-correct.
And how has funding been, especially the past few years when we've seen the global financial crisis, and how has it been, whether it's raising funds or even disbursing funds in different programs and projects?
I mean, I think fortunately we have seen a consistent level of funding. There was a sort of a nice increase in funding several years back, and then we've been able to hold at that level. That's not to say that we don't need more. We certainly do. There's a lot more that could be done with more funding for Gavi, the Vaccine Alliance, with more funding through USAID out to country partners. But I think between the resources that the global community has been able to pull together and the resources that national governments in Africa and Asia are themselves putting on the table, we're starting to see a core level of effort that is going a long way to continuing to build progress.
Great. Now, coming back to the report, which is really highlighting some of the challenges and successes in sanitation, water, and diarrheal diseases, can you tell us, moving forward, after this report has been released, what next?
So we're just going to keep talking about diarrhea. Nobody really likes to talk about
it. I know. It's not like you're very nice to hear a subject.
Yeah. But we think that, you know, in order to avoid everyone declaring victory too soon, you know, I mean, policymakers love to sort of say, job done, let's move on to the next challenge. But we need to decision makers to understand it's not success if children are being kept alive only to live limited lives because of brain damage, because of failure to thrive in school. So we're going to just keep pushing that diarrhea is an important issue, that it's a problem that can be solved, that we need to reach every child with these interventions, and that we don't have to accept this crappy situation.
No kidding, right? So then let me have your final word. We will not accept this crappy situation, to quote you. So then what can communities themselves, because a lot of time we look at solutions coming from outside or from the government, but we, each person has also a responsibility.
Yeah.
And we're going to leave it on that, talking about the responsibility of communities and community members. What can people do themselves?
Yeah, some communities have had enormous success in sort of having an agreement, a community culture to not do any open defecation, to use latrines and other improved sanitation, to use hand washing. And these are actual norms that communities meet and agree on and then are able to sort of ask each other to kind of meet their own agreed standards. A little bit of shared accountability. Also, being able to sort of agree on getting the vaccines as they become available, and making sure that all the children in the community receive vaccines. And then another piece is really about children getting to school and being able to stay in school. Mm-hmm. A lot of girl children end up leaving school because of worries about access to sanitation.
Yeah.
And also, as they grow into adolescence, being worried about menstruation and privacy. So communities can really rally around thinking about what are the ways in which girls and boys both can stay in school.
Eileen Quinn, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
It was great to have you on the program today. And that's all the time we have for today. Thanks for joining us. I'm Lenore Moudou with producer Jackson Mongagne. Until next time, take care, be well, and strive to make every day a healthy day.